The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and today we're going to be talking about empowering children through their heritage and through the arts. In our fast-changing society today, many kids feel a bit adrift and their self-confidence suffers. One of the most powerful ways to help them find their way is to help them reconnect with their cultural and family heritage and their sense of place and express themselves through art. My guest this week is Michelle Dirks, who does exactly that. Michelle Dirks is an internationally acclaimed educator and artist who has captured her secrets of teaching success in her Treasure House Press curriculums. For over 15 years, she has taught children ages 3 to 17 creative arts programs from painting to printmaking, primitive weaving to learning from the masters, calligraphy to urban street art, recycled material murals, martial arts, each creating opportunity for richly engaging the students. The result is children rediscovering their passion for learning in a multidisciplinary approach to art education and reconnecting with who they really are deep down. Michelle Dirks provides a vast knowledge base while enhancing their self-esteem and cooperative communication between the students. I'll tell you a little more about Michelle's background before we start talking with her. She's a native of Ireland and graduate of Limerick College of Art and Design. She's been instrumental in founding Irish national arts programs with grants from the Art Council of Ireland. Dirks shares her enthusiasm for lifelong learning with her students to nurture their creativity and sense of heritage. She was one of the top macrobiotic food specialists in the U.S., teaching classes in natural nutrition and cooking for celebrities. She's author of two children's books, Yummy Yummy in My Tummy and Mr. Hoppity's Color Me Cookbook for Kids. And she also did the illustrations for Wild Food Foraging by Deborah Lee Hoagie. The student work produced from her curriculums has created fundraising opportunities for a number of organizations, including Pegasus Artworks, Boys and Girls Club of Delaware, Chester County Community Foundation, Coatesville Community Education Foundation, and many others. Dirks led a 5-organization-sponsored tour called The Art of Hope, reaching 10 locations, and I think this was last year, ending with a Festival of Hope event, so I want to ask her about that. So welcome to Family First, Michelle.
Thank you very much, Randy.
It's really my pleasure to have you here, and this is such an important, important topic. So how did you first become interested in helping children to discover their ability to express themselves and to discover their heritage and sense of place?
I think when I first arrived here, and I was a student of macrobiotics, and in the family, there were 3 young girls. And my life, I was the oldest of my younger sisters, 2 years younger than me. And I never really had an opportunity to be around younger children. And suddenly, during the day in the house, it was studying and assisting and teaching and cooking and also with the young children. And I had no idea what to do with little children. So instinctively, I started using my art. And then what started to happen was I started to go outside in nature, and I started to just bring natural things into the house. I think I was very much inspired from my mother as a child. But then, you know, doing the little things with the kids, when I started having my own children and I moved out to Chester County out into the suburbs, I didn't know a living soul. And it was like I was taking the steps with my children. I didn't really know what a Wawa was. I didn't know what anything was around here. I didn't even know where the nearest town was. It was just, I was just planted here and just had three boys, boom, boom, boom. So with that, I started, my instinct was to get everyone up and out in the morning and walk. And as we'd walk, we would collect treasures and bring them back home and then just make beautiful tables and make things from twigs and from anything we could find, make animals and make instruments. And it just became this magical experience with my kids. And as a result, when I got to know more children, this started to they started to follow suit. Just making these beautiful creatures and everything like that. And it just, wow, I just started thinking this is amazing. It's just by going into nature, we are totally connecting to the link that I had in Ireland because I was doing the same thing as a child. And it grew from that.
Oh, that's a wonderful story, and that you followed your instinct of how to interact with the kids and how to bring them back into nature. That's what your programs, your curriculums are now, is teaching them to follow that instinct to reconnect.
That's correct.
So you're teaching what you know from your own experience. So can you tell us a little more about your background in Ireland? Because I know you're still strongly connected.
It was very interesting. In the 60s in Ireland, my mother, being quite young, had this aspiration to be a hotel manager and was quite informed in the about 1962 or 1961 that women in Ireland, unless they were teachers or nurses, everybody had to give up their job once they got married. It was severe economic times. And so, of course, like everybody else, she was married and suddenly had to give up her aspirations of working and decided, wow, what am I going to do with young children? And she decided that was absolutely nothing. And she said she couldn't get paper. So my father worked in the airport, and she asked him if he could get the actual from the control tower, the maps, and bring them back so we could sketch on them. And she would cut them up and make them into little books. And she would collect every carton that she had of Kellogg's, Rice Krispies, or anything that she could collect, tin cans, clean them out, and create a store for us. So around the house, we had an interaction with many, many different things. In the garage, it turned into the craft place. She created this beautiful, it was like nearly like a living room that we could move the chairs, and she asked neighbors for old ballroom dresses. And if anybody went to France or the United States, she asked them if they could bring home really pretty necklaces that they found or ball gowns. And we would have a box of those. And then in another room, she had little easels set up where that was painting and drawing. And so the house became extremely interactive, and as a result, she brought many, many moms in and created a wonderful community doing that. So that was really, I believe my mother started what she doesn't realize was an actual after-school program.
Yes, yes, that sounds wonderful. What a great way to enjoy childhood.
Oh, it was absolutely a fairy tale. And it's so interesting that so many of my friends have done the same thing as they got older. It's, and even live nearby and still connect with my mom, which is wonderful. And we're in a very small community, and it was the first generation that was removed off the land. So wow. My father was a farmer, so they moved into the town, and there was a lot. So they had a lot in common. So the actual estate we lived in, I don't live on an actual estate. It was an old Quaker property. And there was about maybe 30 houses built in a development. And they kept a lot of open space. So everybody decided to build flower gardens and vegetable gardens. And there was beautiful stone walls. And on a Friday, Saturday afternoon, sometimes even during the week, everyone's out weeding, and we all became part of the community, weeding and taking care of the gardens.
What a wonderful picture. I mean, even though it was hard economic times, people were creative and close to the land, and yeah, fascinating first generation off the land. It's a long time since most of us in this country could say that. So what started you developing curricula for kids? And obviously we're familiar with a lot of different variety of art media, and dress up is a wonderful thing we used to do. So how did you start developing curricula and presenting it in a more formal fashion?
That developed over a period of time when my children were very young. I started to notice that how quickly children learn, and not only that, how quickly they can teach other children. So I would make it very, very simple for my older child to teach his younger brother. And then when other children came in, if I show them something, instinctively I would ask, could you please mentor these two children here while I'm working with the other two children over here? And I started developing very, very just simple techniques that I thought would work with kids. And I also felt that working with a small group of children was really, really effective. So the curriculum that I created, I just went from my cooking. And then from that, I decided the recipes had to be very simple. If recipes aren't simple, no mom is going to actually cook this for their child. And no mom is going to actually cook, you know, an elaborate menu with 20 different ingredients. So I noticed the difference in my cooking for a family and somebody else who was writing for, who maybe just kind of following recipes and cooking for a class. And it dawned on me that, you know, family-style cooking and family-style activities is very different than something else. So I would say, you know, it was based on trying to keep things simple, very, very simple.
That makes sense, because I always say that if you can get the kids to participate in the kitchen, they're much more likely to eat the good stuff that you're making than if you just present it and say, oh, this is good. So keeping it simple allows you to draw them in and be involved in the whole process. And then you applied that to the art materials as well.
And I always had my children involved in the cooking process. So in the cooking classes, I wanted everyone to see that, you know, my children, I'm not the only one just eating natural food. My children are invested in this and they love eating. So I would have my 2-year-old sitting there completely engrossed in the class and doing whatever, because I believed that if somebody saw a family, you know, eating well and surviving and being healthy, then they realize this works.
Very powerful picture.
With my art curriculum, if it's simple and the medium or the, what could I say, materials are accessible, then as a result, it's not intimidating and it's easy to do.
I think that's so important, especially today, to have the materials accessible so that parents don't feel they have to go buy some fancy painting set for their child to get involved in art. Like you said, they can take a walk, or what are some other suggestions that parents can just find some materials that don't have to cost?
Well, this is really interesting. Kids love to paint with twigs.
Mm.
And you get the most absolutely wonderful marks. You know, also, you know, just if you're out, even blueberries or raspberries, the juice from that makes beautiful watercolors. The children can see that, you know, you can get these beautiful blues and reds by using, you know, the juice from the strawberries and blueberries and blackberries. That's very, very simple things. Also, painting a leaf and just printing it on a piece of paper. They're fascinated by the actual veins, and it's a great way to teach somebody about, you know, about botanical flowers and illustrations. Twigs print beautifully. Rubbing from a bark is so exciting. and it's something that I can cut into shapes or tear, and that becomes their little... We just keep books, and they just put their, you know, their little drawings into little books.
That's wonderful. I'll have the children make their own books of their impressions that they're making mm-hmm. from these things. So backing up a bit, what do you think is the most pressing problem today for children in gaining confidence in themselves?
I believe from working with so many teenagers, I've worked with so many young children too, and confidence, if there isn't enough tension, there's a lack of confidence. You have some very shy children, and I mean, the whole attachment to electronics is quite alarming. And my whole thing is, if you can engage a child, first of all, what engages a young child? And I had this experience yesterday. I love to felt, and I was working with a group of 11-year-olds. And initially, like, oh, we're not touching that. It's soap and water. That's gross. And then I decided, okay, you know, there was a 6-year-old, and he put up his hand. It's in a community center, and he said, can I do it? I'd love to do it. So I said, okay. So I knew the minute I started doing it, they'd be all zoned over. So we set out the wool, and we wrapped in beautiful colors, and I could see the girls looking from the corner of their eyes, and then, of course, we were making felted bracelets. Well, once the bracelet was nearly formed, they were all over joining.
Yes.
And then there was two little 4-year-old twins that one of the directors had brought in. It was her grandchildren, and, of course, they saw it, and I'm like, a 4-year-old, can they do this? Well, my gosh, they could do it better than me. They didn't want to be taught. They knew how to do it. It was phenomenal to see it. And it was the teenagers that had more of a difficult time. And what I noticed with the girls is they want utter perfection. And I feel that it's so important to engage young children. And once they're engaged, their thoughts are elsewhere. Their thoughts are in what they're doing. Their thoughts are on creating something and following the steps, and also it's coming from them. And then their self-esteem develops. I usually will see how they can become engaged, and I might even create 2 or 3 stations, and they'll connect to something that they really love, and once they're engaged, they stay there. And once I see somebody not moving for 45 minutes, then I know something has happened. And confidence level, I believe, builds in just in a mentoring process. If an adult has the ability to mentor and say, that's really great because I'm constantly getting this useless, I hate it. And, I mean, a number of occasions it's thrown away until they begin to realize, I'm actually doing something. I'm actually producing something. I'm actually writing something. And, wow, this looks pretty fabulous. And I think sometimes they get a shock that they've actually done this. I had 2 girls in the last 2 weeks create dream catchers, but I wanted the dream catchers to have a symbolism of hope, and it had to be something from themselves. And it's really, really difficult for middle school children to have something very individual come from themselves. It has to be basically approved, or they're afraid of that individualism to come out. And I think it's very important to mentor young teenagers in groups, in small groups, so they can verbalize how they feel, verbalize what their hurt is, and sometimes it's emotional, sometimes it's just growth hormones, but it's really, really important for them to be able to verbalize how they feel, and then use that self-expression in something positive. And that, I feel, really gives them confidence.
Oh, that makes so much sense. We're coming up on a break now, Michelle, but I want to talk more about that. Working in small groups where they can interact and one can get started because what you're doing looks like fun, and then the others lose their sense of being self-conscious and getting engaged, and So they drop that judgment where they think some teacher is going to say, well, that's not good enough, or mm-hmm. you should do it this way. That's so powerful, and it kind of balances some of what goes on in school when there's 30 kids and they're all expected to do the same thing pretty much. Mm-hmm. And I think the difference, what you said, between the young people and the teenagers, that the teenagers have already absorbed all that self-criticism and self-judgment. Mm-hmm. And it must be gratifying to break through that when you're working with the older kids.
It is amazing to be able to see. It's like the light bulb goes off.
Yes, well,
and you begin to see, and then they'll suddenly something forms, and they're like, "Wow, I can actually do this. I can actually paint, or I can actually express myself this way."
So we're going to take a break now, Michelle, and come back to that. It's fabulous.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. We're talking about empowering children through the arts and rediscovering their heritage. And my guest today is Michelle Dirks, who is an internationally acclaimed educator and artist and has been very successful teaching kids of all ages through her Treasure House Press curriculums. She's also author of 2 children's books and has done her programs both in Ireland and in the U.S. And we've been talking about how to really improve kids' sense of self and empowerment and confidence by allowing them to express themselves without judgment. And she was talking about how effective it is to have them in small groups where they can interact with each other and get to feel comfortable expressing themselves. And at the break, Michelle, you were talking about how teenage girls in particular seem to have been burdened with our particular way of educating kids today. And could you tell more about that?
In fifth grade, you know, everyone is still allowed to express themselves. Everybody, you know, you have art classes. They do little projects and crafts. And then it's boom into sixth grade, very little. And I think it's such a huge transition. And what I've noticed is the girls coming to me and in their actual workbooks at school going, "Do you see what I did today at school?" And I'm like, so within a period of 2 months, I'm like, is that all they do is draw all day? And I noticed the little unicorns and the little cats with hearts on their chests. And I've noticed beautiful flying dragons and dogs that are exotic. And I'm thinking, wow, this is so unbelievably amazing. It's all hidden inside. And they're given out to, if they're, you know, if they're drawing and they should be doing their work. And all they're trying to do is express themselves in this very, because they still haven't formed their own identity. So their own identity is coming through, even like in symbolic or mythological ways. And I thought, how interesting is if I can bring this out and use the symbolism that they have in a larger form so they can see it themselves. So I started to create these murals with the girls where their work, their exact drawings are replicated onto panels. And their sense of empowerment from that, because they are thought to, you know, they all are thought to be young ladies too quickly. And that childlike imagery and dreamlike aspect of 11 and 12-year-olds is still there. And I feel it is vital that that is tapped into, and that is where later years that can really come out. Because if you're told, well, you can't be drawing cats with hearts on them because it's interfering with your work, they'll stop drawing. That imagination will stop. So I feel that after school programs, especially ones where they're allowed to truly express themselves, if that's what their field is or if that's what they really like, huge aspects and their growth just grows by leaps and bounds, and their confidence, because it's basically they're shining their own light. Their own light within is coming out.
Oh, that makes so much sense. I know I did very well in school, but I was doodling little animals in all the margins, and both of my parents were painters as a hobby, and I always thought I had to hide them. But
yeah.
That's wonderful. The idea of glowing it up as a mural is just, I'm sure they absolutely love that.
It's amazing. And they came up with a theme. And again, I just listen and we write and we come up with ideas. So it's just one beautiful, amazing concept after another. They decided, the group I worked with at South Brandywine Middle School was Dare to Dream.
Oh,
and around
lovely.
Were just beautiful unicorns and dragons, and the cats with their hearts on their chest are the most beautiful animals I've ever seen, and this is by 11 and 12-year-olds.
That is great. So is storytelling then part of your approach to their art?
Yes, absolutely. I feel storytelling is absolutely so important, because once you get to know the child, they feel comfortable with you, the story starts. About them, the family, their background, their dreams, their aspirations. And my goal is, in the next few years, the children that I'm working with, for a period of time, I would love them to illustrate their own books. Children have such a wealth of information, and their imaginations are absolutely beautiful. And when an adult looks at a child's work, we always go, ah, or whatever, because some part of it resonates with us. And when when an 11 or 12-year-old youth writes a story, it's a story true from their heart. It's still this beautiful purity that I believe can be used for healing, for, you know, bringing us back into that childlike form, bringing us back into something that we remembered that was pure and fabulous. And I think it's really, and also to realize that they can be authors.
Yes, that's so empowering, that they can produce something that other people can benefit from.
Mm-hmm.
In words or art. So when we first met, I was so intrigued by the idea of helping the kids use their art and their storytelling to reconnect with their own ethnic or racial or geographic past. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think a lot of children, especially in cities, we have a very transient society. and you know, a lot of youth that arrive from Puerto Rico, South America, you know, different parts of the country, even me coming from Ireland, it was a shock. I mean, I felt I was a number of times in a movie. Not in reality. I had to pinch myself at when my first boy started playing T-ball. I thought I was in one of those, you know, baseball movies. And I would look around and go, am I really, really here or am I somewhere else? Because again, it's so different. And I think we forget. You know, being here for how different the United States is. And I think it's very important that ethnic groups hold that culture and hold that, you know, different traditions that they have. And I think it's very important that children who move quite a bit have a sense of where they are in if you want to call it a place. And I think that can come from, and this is something I would love to have in a curriculum, because basically we all come from an indigenous past, that they would learn about what was originally here, and that was the Native Americans. And for me, once I discovered that and discovered their natural healing powers and their use of medicinal plants for medicinal purposes, I think a child, that's such a dream state for a child to go to, because their imagination totally opens up to what Native American culture is like. And they gravitate to it very quickly because of the horses and the animals. And if you ask a child, every child has their favorite animal. Every child has a favorite flower, favorite smell. And I think it's very important that they know wherever they move to, it's really the same because the same people originally were there. And it's just connecting to that deep ancestral connection to the earth. I think it's vital that kids learn from nature very, very early on.
That's very powerful. It reminds me, we got to know some indigenous Native Americans when we were living near the Canada border, and one of them had been instrumental in helping limit alcoholism among some of the tribes. And when he was asked how did he do that, he said it was by reconnecting the younger generation with their ancestral past and giving them back their pride of who their tribe was. And with the ceremonies and the connection with nature and, like you said, the healing herbs and all of that, that it wasn't about telling them alcohol was bad. It was about giving them that pride of place and sense of their past.
And also taking care of the place. So if there is a community garden, or learning to create that space, that sacred space within their own space, whether it's learning that they could grow plants, or in their tiny backyard, they can create the garden that they would like, learning just to, whether it's a tomato or a basil plant or oregano or some herb, that they can connect to. And also I've seen quite a difference in the art from different groups. So my English is a second language, the ESL youth that I work with, they will have the most vibrant colors that anybody, they will mix colors and it'll be like some incredible festivity. And again, you know, they tell me that Mexico has all these colors and the buildings are bright and beautiful. Everything looks like fireworks. And you can really, really tell the different, who has actually really painted the different paintings because of the colors they use.
Oh, that's very interesting. I know out in the west, the southwest of the United States, the colors are all this sky blue and bright orange. And we drove across the country a couple summers ago and do a lot of it now. And it just made so much sense that their jewelry, the Indian jewelry there is all turquoise and coral. And that's their whole environment is turquoise and coral.
Wow.
In their coloring.
And you will, like somebody who's been here in inner city Coatesville for a while, the youth will, because of the school colors, suddenly I will have five or six boys just doing black and red. So I banned black. Black is a color that doesn't exist in my palette.
Good.
Because I guarantee you, black is the first color, and I'm like, no, we can make our own blacks from different colors. It can be a purple or a dark brown. We're not using black, and that's quite a shock for them because the first color, especially city children will pick is red and black.
Is that right? That's interesting. Wow. Well, what do you do with children who come from maybe a family that's first or generation here, first or second generation, and their parents are very eager for them to integrate with the American predominant culture? And how do you interest them in rediscovering their family heritage and their past?
Well, it's really interesting because the ESL children, the English as a second language, if I design a curriculum, what I don't say, this is what we're doing. I will actually sit with the teacher and we'll do a presentation. And I will present to them the work that I do and the curriculums, and they will choose the curriculum because they're very, very, the different groups are very, very different. The ESL kids, it's very interesting. They move so much. So if they do a painting or a mural, they can't take it with them. But if it's an article of clothing, they can take it with them. So I create these book bags, painted book bags, where they actually paint the book bags, create images, usually symbolic images that relates to who they are on the bags. And then they're stitched, the grommets put in, and the actual string put in. So they actually have to beat in the grommets with a hammer. And this is huge with the, because they know then, and it's really fabulous to go to the school and see the girls wearing their painted book bags. Now, if I take the same project to a community center where the kids are from, say, a more urban, rural background, that is not what they're interested in. They want a mural. So the actual book bags the ESL kids can wear, they can take with them, and it's their personal expression on themselves.
And they love that. I mean,
they
so
absolutely
often
love it because they're okay not to be in a brand name. Do you see what I mean? Because they're okay with expressing color and more of their individual personality because they've traveled so much more. Therefore, the youth who has been here and not really traveled needs to feel a sense of, the label. And I'm not wearing something that I've painted on my back or that I painted.
Interesting. So you have to be quite sensitive to where they're coming from, literally as well as figuratively.
So what I've decided to do with them, which is kind of an interesting, I'm deciding to create their own brand name, which has become, this is the first time I've done this, that the group creates an actual logo and a brand logo, and that will be used as their tag on the bag or on a T-shirt to show that you don't need to have an actual brand name that's very well known. You can actually have your own.
And is that the group that designs that logo, or
the group designs the logo and then they choose? And it's really interesting because once they know they've all done it together, there's no competition. It's like perfectly fine that's chosen because it's a group idea.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, Michelle, we're up on our second break here, so we'll be back in a few minutes. Keep listening because this is great information about how to make kids confident and empowered.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun?
Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're talking with Michelle Dirks about how to empower children through the arts and reconnecting with their heritage, with nature, and their family's past. And she's been sharing wonderful stories about how kids open up and draw beautiful cats with hearts. I love cats. That makes sense. And decorating their book bags and getting rid of that competition between store-bought brands, but creating their own brands by feeling they can produce something valuable. And so I was wondering, Michelle, if you could share a couple more examples of your experiences with kids. You've said that sometimes it can be very different between kids that are English as a second language and others that are have three generations grown up in the urban environment. Can you share another example?
Yes, actually I can. This is a young boy. He is in seventh grade, and his name is Tizier. And he's from Delaware. And I was doing, it was basically coming up with self-expression, coming up with positive affirmations to use on a poster and to do an anti-smoking campaign. And he would come into class and sit in the back and, you know, not really do too much. I think he was too cool, but he had to be in the class. And so anyway, I would say, you're not going to sit with us and discuss anything. And he was like, no. So one day I went in and I just decided to read just a book on self-expression and what positive affirmations could do. It was very, very simple. And I sat there and read the book and I said, I would like you to take something from this and just, you know, write a sentence, illustrate it. You know, let's see what the words can look like, because sometimes a word can have a very strong meaning. So I didn't pay attention. He actually worked. He took pencils out and markers. And at the end of the class, I mean, I walked around and I suddenly was, I cannot believe what this kid has just done. And what he had written was, I hope that all dark shadows can become colorful. And here he had all the shadows, of all the letters, multicolored.
Oh, my.
I thought, this is so beautiful.
Yes, indeed. Ah, that's
then
great.
Yes. He did this other little poem. It was an anti-drug poem, and it was these corner smoking boys. These corner smoking boys, I think they're so cool with their bad teeth. These corner smoking boys, think they're so cool with their bad teeth and attitudes, they are some very cool fools.
Oh, my.
And we created this huge, he wrote it on this mural, and he illustrated this. Then what we started noticing is he was writing during class. And I thought, oh, you really, really like to write? And he goes, yeah. So I brought him in a sketchbook. We decided as a group to get him pens. We got a little folder for him. It started within 2 or 3 weeks, he's writing short stories, and on Friday evenings, this was at the Boys and Girls Club of Delaware, started actually telling his short stories in the evening. And I just think it's so amazing that here is a kid who was on the side of the streets, found something within himself, and started expressing it through words, and just became this completely different child.
That's beautiful. That must give you such satisfaction.
It's just, it's amazing because everyone had, they all, every single child has just this amazing talent and uniqueness that is just bursting to come out.
Yeah, what can we do about, you know, school systems are so strapped for cash these days, and they're cutting the music and the art and the free kinds of physical expression. They just keep focusing on the team sports because they think that that's what's going to bring in more money and support. But, do you offer these curricula in schools or after school or where can parents suggest to their schools that they could use something like this?
I think after schools is a perfect time, and I asked the youth, why do you like to be in after school programs? And they said, because if we go home, we can't be with our friends because our friends aren't close by. We don't have a parent to drive us to the friend's house, so we're stuck at home. Here we can get our homework done. There's no pressure in the evenings. We have it done, and then after homework, we have this time to just be ourselves. Express who we are, paint, cook, and I think it is vital that after-school programs stay in schools. How they will be funded, I'm convinced it is not going to be through the school district. Mm-hmm. I think that it has to come from outside funding, and I think things like foundations will get my funding, and they in turn will keep these programs going. Because I think it is absolutely vital that the youth have time to express who they are. And even in a sport, they still don't have time. They're racing. It's just racing,
yes.
racing. And the pressure and the stress is becoming so intense that at some stage somebody will have to wake up and go, as an adult, I watched them one day from 7:30, 7:15 coming into school, middle schoolers, thinking to myself, you know, the hour they have to be up to get there, some telling me 5:30. By the time they get into school, they have to be sitting down at 7:30 in the morning, not moving practically all day, just shuffling from class to class. Nothing where they can, music, computers sometimes are gone, gym is gone in some cases, arts not there, and there's very limited supplies. And they've been just told to sit all day and then sit on a bus for an hour home. And I'm thinking to myself, can an adult really do this? I think it would be fabulous if you got about 200 adults and asked them to do the same thing.
Yes, yes.
Just sit in the classroom and raise your hand, could you go to the bathroom? And I think it would be a very interesting experiment because I think it wouldn't last very long. And I think they're just the actual pressure on the youth is way too much, way too much.
Yes, and certainly in the team sports, we still call it play, but it's not the kind of play you're talking about where they can just play and use their imaginations and sit if they want or dance if they want or
yes.
paint if they want or write. It's so different from the regimented kind of athletics that most kids it's physical at least, but they don't get that free time, like you said. I thought it was very interesting that you think the after-school program should still be attached to the school because those are the kids that they enjoy and know and can and need to relate to every day. So if they can relate in this play kind of environment, things might get better during the daytime as well.
and the interesting is they're so looking forward to it. They're so looking forward to it. I did a fashion design course in January to March, and they were lined up at the door. Zoom, I'm finishing my homework. I'll be 5 minutes and I'll be down. And in some cases, they're in the room waiting for me. And that's what you want, is the excitement. And not only that, to actually, they actually designed and created their own clothes. And I brought seamstresses in and they helped, actually put them together. They designed their own bags, painted a lot of, and then we had a fashion show and they had professional hair stylists come in, makeup artists. And this 12-year-old Brooke turned to me at the end of the night and she went, "This is the best day of my entire life. I could not imagine that I would ever do this." And some of the girls that would never get the opportunity to walk on a runway walked on a runway with such pride. And one little girl who just has such a difficult time expressing herself, is so hard on herself. Once she stood on that catwalk and walked down, there was a few, we were blinking at each other, could not believe what happened to this young girl. She transformed on the catwalk, transformed, radiant smile, turning her hair. I'm like, this cannot be Maria. This is not the Maria I know. And it's just really interesting. I think it's so important that kids have many different experiences so they know themselves. This is an experience I love. This is something I can do again. This is something I want to do again.
That makes so much sense. I really encourage moms to have their daughters take a modeling course because it is so much fun, and you get to see, you know, what different personalities you can take on and just have fun, pretend you're on TV and so on. It's just very expansive.
Oh, yeah, and hair completely different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they would have never imagined that this curly hair could be dead straight and down to their waist.
Right.
Now, I never knew that a lot of these makeup artists use colored chalk to dye hair for a runway.
Oh, my. Colored chalk.
Goodness. So it would come off in the wash. I had no idea that's what they do. So we had purple hair and blue hair and pink hair.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that.
I know. So they wet the chalk and put it in their hair. They paint their hair.
That's awesome. So I know you've written two children's books. Are they available generally? The Yummy Yummy in My Tummy about good eating and Mr. Hoppity's Color Me Cookbook for Kids. Where are they available, Michelle?
They are available through me, through emailing me.
And oh, okay.
At treasurehousepress@gmail.com.
That's treasurehousepress@gmail?
@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And the wild food foraging, so you did some illustrations for that as well?
Yes, I love illustrating. And my first introduction to wild food foraging was from Deborah Lee Hogue. And she had asked me to illustrate her book. And she feels that it really helped cure her of breast cancer.
Oh, wonderful.
Using medicinal plants plus macrobiotics. So it was a very interesting experience. I think for me, I would do it very differently. It was done a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
And I am still very interested in native herbs, and I'm hoping that will be one of my next books that I will create, would be using herbs for just very, very simple remedies and just basically for health.
Oh, wonderful. So we just have a couple minutes left. So what advice would you give to parents to create this kind of empowering environment for their kids if they aren't in a exciting after-school program like this?
I am hoping soon to have videos available that, you know, you can link on and see what kind of simple environments you can create. I think it's very important for young children to have a nature table, within the house. So to bring the nature into the house. So if you're in the city and you're in a park, to collect things, my one thing I always say to young moms, and I did with my children, is we had a treasure bag, and we went out with a treasure bag and collected things. And I think to create magic in a child's life, to realize by bringing these wonderful aspects of nature back into the home, you're also creating it at home too. And it's, you know, the use of imagination and magic and adventure. And that really stimulates a lot of imagination. It stimulates, you know, brings them out of who they are into something much bigger, and that grows. And when you get older, a lot of parents say, well, I don't know, my daughter or son is really good artist. I don't know what to do. And I just say, just watch what they're doing. Watch what they're doing with pencils, with pens, and let them go into a store and choose themselves. Instead of, you know, handing them a box of crayons, maybe they would like to experiment. Just let them experiment with different mediums. And if they know of an artist, just ask. I think it's very important that a child has a sense of maybe their own space. If there's younger siblings that will get into the paints, create a little box and have the paintings, their sketchbook, any sort of watercolors, paintbrushes, and put it
well,
aside.
Well, Michelle, we're up on the end of the show, so I'm sorry to cut you off, but stay tuned, because Michelle Dirks is going to be developing curricula that can be used not just in our area, but to allow other teachers to develop this kind of wonderful environment for connecting kids through art with their heritage and their family past. And thank you so much for being a guest. Any final words?
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.